Stillman and Company, 102.5, 106.3 The Game, streaming live on Twitter, Twitch, YouTube, and Facebook Live. We are live from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game National Studios. We are presented by the Southern Bank of Tennessee, and with tomorrow being the NHL draft, where the Predators hold the 5th, 23rd, and 26th picks in the draft. We will pretty much be wall-to-wall hockey. Chad Withrow, kind enough to move up to Thursday. But I want to talk about a story that I've seen now in Outkick, and I've seen an awful announcing. The headline, awful announcing. America needs a vacation from Stephen A. Smith. Outkick. ESPN should already regret the $100 million investment in Stephen A. Bobby Burak at Outkick writing, surely ESPN management knows all of this. They saw how Smith covered the finals and the NBA draft. It made them cringe as much as the public. They also know deep down that adding him to Monday Night Football would undermine Disney's $2.7 billion a year investment in the NFL. But they are stuck. They have already signed on the dotted line and are forced to try to make it work. It should be noted that ESPN has responded. This is John Manzo, who is the Associate Director of Communications for ESPN, who says Stephen A. is actually on a well-deserved vacation into July, yet the conversation hasn't stopped. A reminder that his influence does not take a day off. Chad Withrow joins us from Outkick, presented by the Southern Bank of Tennessee. Chad, does America have a Stephen A. Smith problem? Your thoughts?
I think that Stephen A. Smith, and I've not read Bobby's piece. I think Bobby does a good job, but I've not read the piece that you're referencing, but the fact that we're talking about Stephen A. Smith so much, even at Outkick, I feel like, doesn't that show that Disney's kind of getting their bang for their buck with Stephen A. Smith? I mean, he was the biggest celebrity of the NBA Finals. And the NBA Finals featured the league MVP. And we talked more about Stephen A. Smith than we did Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. So I feel like that's probably a win for Disney. Now, we can sit here and talk about, is anybody worth a $100 million contract in media? And I know that Stephen A. Smith is one of those guys who's willing to work all the time and willing to be on every show, and in fact wants to be on every show. So that's a good thing. It's not like he's afraid to work. I think Stephen A. Smith is very good at what he does. He's very smooth. He understands, you know, how to yell at certain times to get attention. So I don't agree with a lot of his takes, but I think he's a very good tactician of those takes and of what he does. And the fact that he gets NBA players so riled up talking about him, I feel like that he's worth it. It's the same with Pat McAfee. There's so much talk about Pat McAfee that if you're Disney and ESPN, you're probably thinking, hey, that's money well spent. That's a good partnership because these guys move the needle. Who else at ESPN moves the needle anymore? I mean, it's Stephen A. Smith and Pat McAfee, who's not even an ESPN employee, I guess, other than College Game Day, but he's a partner of theirs with the show. He still owns his own show. Who else moves the needle anymore for that company? And it's really no one but those two guys.
So here's something that I find fascinating about Stephen A. Smith. First of all, I agree with everything you said. I mean, Stephen A. was the star of the NBA Finals. And I think this has hurt the NBA. And I think the Oklahoma City Thunder are the antithesis of this. But the NBA has been taken over by First Take. I call it the first takeification of the NBA, which the ratings are down and people are bemoaning a finals matchup because, well, it's small markets and it's not stars. And is SGA a star? And is he not? And I think a lot of this goes back to how ESPN and most importantly First Take covers the NBA. They talk about five players: LeBron, Steph Curry, Kevin Durant, Giannis, whomever. They compare them all to guys from the 80s and the 90s, and they only talk about the big markets, the 76ers, the Knicks, the Lakers. That's it. Boston. So when they don't have that, it kind of becomes a free-for-all, and the big story becomes Stephen A. Smith getting into a big fight with the city of Memphis. And the thing I don't understand is, all these players get riled up about what Stephen A. Smith says. They all hate him. They all go to the podium. They talk about him. It becomes this big talking point. And yet, First Take talks as much, if not more, NFL than they talk NBA. And I don't feel like the NFL has become overtaken by First Take. Why is that?
So, it's a great observation. Here's what I'd say about the NFL versus the NBA. With the NFL, when a show like First Take talks about the NFL, they're talking about the story. The NFL is the story. If you're looking at sports and we're just going to rank, okay, what's the biggest story? It's mostly going to be the NFL because that's what everyone pays attention to. So when they address the NFL and they talk about it, now we can get into the details of how often should you talk about the Dallas Cowboys. I do think you can talk about stuff like that too much. But if you're talking about the NFL, you're talking about the story. When you're talking about the NBA, I think you're making a story because the story doesn't exist right now. And there are a lot of factors that go into that. But I believe the NBA storification of let's go ahead and make something up and, you know, pit these two against each other or talk about this big market, that's producers at ESPN or Stephen A. Smith saying, we're going to make a story here. Now, LeBron James and Stephen A. Smith getting into a fight, they made that story. And that was the story around the NBA for a part of the season. So the NFL is just talking about the story that already exists. The NBA is trying to make up a story. Where the NBA has to go, and this is going to be a part of the big deal with ESPN, ESPN is paying so much money for the NBA. It looks like the worst media deal in history with the amount of money the NBA is going to get. If you were making that kind of investment, you must do a much better job of promoting the entire league. And you must do a better – Stephen A. Smith's got to do a better job of this. Everyone does. You have to make the league compelling. Cooper Flagg needs to be great, and he needs to be great quickly. The NBA needs Cooper Flagg to be really good. The NBA needs Cooper Flagg to also have a rival that's really good. They need a lot of different things to happen and to pop for this media deal to actually make sense. But I think step one is, and look, I'm not advocating for a network to be paid promotional wings of leagues. But if you're Disney and you're spending that much money for the NBA, I want to get my top talent on board with creating a league that people care about across the board, or at least with half the league and not a tenth of the league. So that's going to be ESPN's charge moving forward, is to make sure that they're making the entire league something that most of America wants to pay attention to, because right now it's just not the case.
Here's what I also don't get, Chad Withrow with us. The NBA players, man, they react to Stephen A. Smith. You know, Tyrese Halliburton, after one of the games in the finals, started talking about the talking heads. We've seen Stephen A. and Durant get into it. You talked about Stephen A. and LeBron getting into it. When's the last time a football player went to the podium after a game and said, you know, Stephen A. can shove it? When's the last time that happened? Why is it that basketball – I mean, I think Kevin Durant – left Oklahoma City and went to Golden State because TV probably talked about how, well, Durant needs to win a championship. And then when Durant didn't get any credit for those championships, he left Golden State because TV said, well, he doesn't get any credit for those championships. When did that happen? And why, again, is this not an issue with the NFL?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a lot of it is just it's part of the culture of the NBA to care more about Stephen A. Smith. And Stephen A. Smith is seen as more of a part of the NBA than he is the NFL. I think it's the nature of the sports, too. I mean, just, you know, simply from a math standpoint, you're playing with five guys in the court. It's a much more individualistic sport at times in the NBA. It lends itself to stars that have rabbit ears and that hear everything and see everything and get a lot more sensitive. In the NFL, you don't oftentimes have that you don't have that ability to do that when you're surrounded by many more players in your locker room. It's much more of a team focus. Don't step out of line. Don't say anything that's going to hurt the team type sport. So I think that the nature of the two sports are very different. And I just think part of the NBA culture is watching Stephen A. Smith, everything he has to say, watching Kendrick Perkins and everything he has to say, which I don't see many good things that Kendrick Perkins says, quite honestly. I think he's one of the dumber people on TV. And that's across anything, sports, politics, anything I've watched. I can't think of many dumber people than Kendrick Perkins on television. But NBA players love it. And even when they hate what they're saying, they love talking about what they're saying. So, Jared, I just think it's a part of the culture of the NBA to care about Stephen A. Smith and Kendrick Perkins. And it's part of the culture of the NFL to say, we're bigger than that. We don't need to pay attention to Stephen A. Smith and Kendrick Perkins because everybody talks about us all the time. So why concern yourself with two people?
You know, one thing I do think about is the NBA Finals, and I saw some people complaining about Stephen A. Smith with him being on the NBA Finals coverage, and I think about it like this. Sometimes I don't want to have like an immediate reaction when it comes to, say, a Titans game on a Sunday. Now, I do the, you know, the Thursday night, our coverage of the draft. I do our Thursday night show, even though I'm on at 2 o'clock for the NFL draft. But you won't hear me break down anything about the Predators in the draft until Monday at 2 o'clock. Because I think about, hey, you know, I want people to hear me on my show. It did feel like, even if you don't like Stephen A. Smith and you can turn off the TV, you had to watch him on the NBA Finals. That's going away. Because Inside the NBA is taking over in the future. Do you think ESPN should be a little bit more judicious in how they use Stephen A. Smith instead of just saying, all right, let's stick Stephen A. Smith on everything? Because that does feel a little over the top.
I think if you're watching everything, then you're oversaturated with Stephen A. Smith. But I think very few people watch everything. You watch everything, you hear everything, you see everything. You are in a distant minority, Jared, of people who consume media. And especially,
and I don't have a problem
media.
With Stephen A. Smith, by the way.
No, yeah, and I'm not saying you do, but point being, like, you're going to see all of it and hear all of it. So it's definite oversaturation for you. But most people aren't watching First Take. Go look at the numbers. Nobody watches that show. Those shows do not do well on any network. Shows in the middle of the day on television, they're silenced in airports, right? What people are seeing is when they're walking around an airport, they see what they're talking about. They see a headline at the bottom of the screen that says, what is Dak Prescott's legacy with the Dallas Cowboys? That's what they're seeing on those shows. So if I'm going to pay, again, I would never pay Stephen A. Smith $100 million or whatever that contract is. But if I do, yeah, I want him on the finals. I want him at the WNBA finals. I want him in NFL games. I want him everywhere if I'm paying the guy that much money to do something. So I think ESPN's doing the right thing by putting him in front of the biggest possible audience, which their biggest possible audience is going to be an NBA Finals game and not a Wednesday edition of First Take. So I think that they're actually doing what's right when it comes to that, especially for what they're paying him. Put him as many places as possible, and if he's that big of a talent, and I do think he's a talent, and I'm like you, I don't have a huge problem with the guy, but if you're going to pay someone that money, you want to get that talent in front of as many people as possible in as many different places as possible, knowing that the way people consume media now, they're not going to take in all of it. So they might see his NBA Finals coverage. They might see a clip from First Take at some point. They might see him talking NFL somewhere else on a different show. They might see a clip of his podcast. They might see him as a guest on a different podcast. There's so many different ways to put Stephen A. Smith out there. And again, if you're going to sign someone to that level of a contract and just announce to the world, he is the person who matters most for ESPN. He is the person people think about when they think of ESPN. Then if I'm his boss, I'm sending him as many places as possible. And good news for them is Stephen A. Smith says no to nothing. So he'll do all of it.
Chad Withrow with us from Outkick. The hot seat is next. Stillman & Company, 102.5 The Game. Stillman & Company, Chad Withrow with us from Outkick, presented by the Southern Bank of Tennessee here on the program. Chad, do you have a thought or do you want to get right to the hot seat?
Let's get right to it.
Number one, what is your level of caring as far as the Pablo Torre and Mike Florio reporting about quote-unquote collusion in the NFL?
4 out of 10. I would say is my level of caring. It's none of it surprised me. This is exactly what I said all along. The moment that Deshaun Watson got the guaranteed money and it backfired so badly for Cleveland, it was the best possible thing for every other NFL owner. Because forever we just heard, hey, if one owner does it, you're going to start seeing guaranteed contracts for quarterbacks. And because it backfired, it's the ultimate cautionary tale. So the fact that these billionaire owners are in some way getting together behind closed doors or maybe by text or email talking about how it's a good thing that someone did not get a guaranteed money that they wanted, then it doesn't surprise me one bit. So there's just nothing shocking about the report. I don't really care. I think the NFL is the best sport. I'm looking at this as a fan, okay? Strictly as a fan of the sport. I'll look at it both ways, with college football and the NFL. College football will never be as good as it was 10 or 15 years ago. It won't. Cats out of the bag, it's never going to be as good. We got to find a way to make it okay, where players aren't leaving every single year in college football. The NFL is perfect right now. They have the perfect system. non-guaranteed contracts make the sport better for the fan because it isn't guaranteed to the players. Other sports don't have that freedom, and they're not as good because of it. So I'm not looking at this from a player perspective, and I know that the NFLPA would argue with me, but Jared, as a fan, I don't care. I think the owners are right to think the way that they do. And none of this really concerns me one bit because I love the NFL looking at it from a fan perspective.
Number two, what do you make of Aaron Rodgers' mystery wife and his comments on Pat McAfee that he no longer wants to be a celebrity?
I laugh because, I mean, Aaron Rodgers can say that all he wants. He loves being a celebrity. I'm sure that he does hate speculation about his bride and everything that goes with it. And I know he's being sincere about that. But everything the guy does is as someone who loves being in the spotlight. He loves playing games. He loves
attention.
People talk about him. He what now?
He loves attention.
Yeah, and he even if he's, let's put it this way, he could be a hermit. And he's going to be a hermit that's going to be on an iPad reading everything being said about him and knowing everything being said about him. And he wants to be a hermit because he wants people to talk more about him. So if he's mysterious, if he's aloof, if he gets married secretly, any of those things, it's going to get people talking. And I think deep down, he's a guy who loves it, even if he claims to hate it. So I just sort of laughed when I heard that. And I'm an Aaron Rodgers fan. I always have been. I hope the guy does well in Pittsburgh. I think the league is going to be more entertaining and more interesting if the Steelers are good and if Aaron Rodgers has one more run in him. But no, I laughed when I heard that because he's clearly a guy who loves the attention.
Number three, do you believe Aaron Rodgers is done after this upcoming season?
I got to see him play. I mean, right now, no. I think he's got 2 years left, if you're asking me. But I have not seen him play with Pittsburgh yet. I think it's going to be better than it was with the Jets. I think in large part because he actually respects his head coach in Kevin Sumlin. I don't think he respected anybody in the Jets organization. He was singing Kumbaya on the way in. Right, and all the players were, man, Aaron Rodgers is cool, and we can talk to him. He's approachable and this and that. And it ends with him and Garrett Wilson not liking each other because Garrett Wilson's not running the right route, and Aaron Rodgers won't throw it to him in the red zone. I don't think there was ever a real mutual respect between the organization and the coach and the owner and the player. I do think that with the Steelers, there's a mutual respect. So I think it's going to go better from that perspective. I think DK Metcalf is going to help. So I'm going to say he's got 2 years left.
Did you watch the NBA draft last night, and do you care about the NBA draft?
I watched about 30 minutes of it. I cared more than I have in recent years, maybe because of Cooper Flagg, maybe because I was seeing if Chaz Lanier was going to get drafted in the first round. He wasn't. But my big takeaway from it was, Jared, how in the world did Rutgers go 15-17 when they had two of the top five picks in the NBA draft? They finished 11th in the Big Ten with picks number 2 and number 5 in the NBA draft. That's astonishing to me that the Rutgers Scarlet Knights, first off, had two of the top five picks. Them and Duke accounted for 4 of the top 5 picks in the draft, but Duke was the team who got to the final 4. Meanwhile, Rutgers did not make the NCAA tournament. 14 SEC teams made the NCAA tournament, and Rutgers, with 2 of the top 5 picks, did not make the NCAA tournament. That is my big takeaway from the draft.
So, I don't even know who Rutgers' coach is.
It's his name's like, it's like Pickle. He's been there like 9 years, the guy who coaches at Rutgers. Hey, I give Rutgers credit for ponying up and paying some NIL to get some big-time players to Piscataway. But I had to look up their record, and I'm like, they didn't play in the tournament, I don't think. Wait a minute. They had a losing record and finished 11th in the Big Ten with 2 of the top 5. Crazy.
If you were the NBA, would you be worried about the TV ratings of the NBA Finals?
Yeah, of course. I mean, yeah. I'm worried about every rating if I'm in the NBA. If I'm in a league, I'm looking at all the ratings, and I'm worried about it. I mean, what's the excuse for the NBA Finals other than you say, well, we got dealt a bad hand because the Knicks didn't win? I mean, you need to create a league that people are interested in no matter what. I know a lot of people watch Game 7 once they got to that Game 7. But overall,
I don't think that's true. 16 million people watch Game 7. And, for instance, more people watch Houston play Florida for the national title game in basketball, which, again, you and I both care way more about college basketball than we do the NBA. But the truth is that Houston and Florida in a winner-take-all game should not be outdrawing Game 7 of the NBA Finals, which traditionally averages 30 million people.
And I think I saw this, the top 10 most-watched basketball games the last year. Number one was Houston, Florida. Number two was Game 7. And then it was both Final Four games after that. I want to say there were only three games that were in the NBA, maybe one other, maybe four. But I know three NBA Final games were in the top 10. The rest were all NCAA tournament games that had more viewers than NBA games. So, yeah, look, to answer your question, Jared, yes, I'm extremely concerned about ratings. I'm extremely concerned, especially now you could just say, well, they've got the paycheck now. They've signed the contracts and they're making that much money, which is true. But if you want to continue to sign TV contracts like that, I do think at some point you need to have better ratings. So, yeah, I'd be very concerned.
Speaking of the NBA, Jay Billis, add him to the list of people that, like Joe Rextro, that believe the NBA product is better than college basketball. My question for you is this: after doing a handful of games, including a couple of playoff games for ESPN, is Jay serious in thinking the NBA is better than college, or is Jay looking to go to the number one crew? And how would you feel about Mike Breen and Jay Billis on the number one NBA crew?
I think Jay Billis is the most pro-player analyst in all of sports. The coach is never right with Jay Billis. If it's a disagreement between player and coach, the player is always right. The players have the right to do anything they want. They can leave midseason if they want. Quit on your team. Enter the portal. Do whatever you want. That has always been Jay Billis' stance. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong. That is his stance 100% of the time. It's against the NCAA, and it was pro-player at all times. What's the most pro-player league going? It's the NBA. So does it surprise me that Jay Billis says something like that? No. But also, go call NBA games if it's that much better. You are the preeminent voice or one of them in college basketball. So I think it's a very odd thing for the voice of college basketball to say that the NBA is a better product. It's not a better product. America is telling us it's not a better product.
Well, I'm telling you, don't you think Billis is really just doing this because he's trying to get the number one NBA job? And if you were ESPN, wouldn't you give it to him over Doris Burke and Richard Jefferson?
I mean, I would, but I mean, I don't think that Jay Billis is doing that. Maybe he does believe this. I think he's wrong, but I don't know that he's just saying that just so he can get the head NBA job. I also think he said that during the NBA draft.
I think right? He said it before the NBA draft, but yeah.
I mean, I think people get a little carried away when they're doing something with one sport and not another. And I don't know. I just completely disagree with him. And it's disappointing to me personally because when I watch Jay Billis call college games, I enjoy it for the most part. And I feel like he is part of the fabric of college basketball. So I don't want the guy who's the part of the fabric of college basketball saying it's an inferior product to the NBA. Because right now, I don't believe that. Are the players better in the NBA? Of course. Are the games any better? Is the league better than college basketball? I think the answer is no, and the ratings are showing that.
Chad Withrow with us from Outkick, as always, presented by the Southern Bank of Tennessee. Chad, great stuff, and we will talk soon.
Always a great time. Enjoy the NHL draft. We'll talk to you next week.
Absolutely. Chad Withrow joining us on the program again tomorrow. We're pretty much going to be wall-to-wall hockey. So I do have a thought when it comes to the number five pick, and apparently I'm not the only one who has this thought when it comes to the Predators and the number five pick. We'll get to that next. Stoneman and Company, 102.5, 106 through the game.
Of the teams that have multiple first-round draft picks, is there a team that you think is best positioned or likeliest to maneuver those picks in the first round?
I would say all of them would consider it. Like, I don't think you guys are doing anything with your fifth overall pick unless it's, you know, maybe moving up or down one or two spots if the draft unfolds certain ways. But I expect you guys to use that pick to in that area to draft a player. But the Predators also have 23 and 26, right? Like, I could see Barry doing something with that. I can definitely see Pittsburgh doing something with 11, 12. I could definitely see Montreal doing something with 16-17 and Philly as well. Like I have to tell you, Adam, we all know who's going one. Schaefer's going one of the Islanders. Most people think Mises going two to San Jose, if not him, Frondell. And then I think you're going to see, I think there's a lot of variance from there, Adam. Like, each team's lists are different from that point on. Like, who do you have at three, and then where are you going from there? So I absolutely do believe, depending on how this unfolds, you are going to see some teams move around.
There you go. That was Elliot on the Midday Show. So how about this little nugget? ESPN has their final mock draft that has come out for the NHL draft. And it's, by the way, hilarious to me that we've talked about this mock draft a little bit today. We have not even gotten into 23 and 26. The Islanders go Matthew Schaefer, number one. No surprise there. Michael Misa, number two to the Sharks. No surprise there. Anton Frondell, number three to the Blackhawks. No surprise there, though. It could be him. It could be Caleb DeNoyer. Could be the pick. Brady Martin at four to Utah, which wouldn't be shocking. But it seems like they're not all that interested in James Hagans. Number five. Porter Martone, ESPN says, not the center, Porter Martone to the Predators at number five. But there's a little nugget at the end of that mock draft write-up. This is Rachel Dorier. I don't know who that is. I know I've seen that name. I think she used to work for John Hines with the Devils, but I'm not totally sure about that. But Rachel Dorier says, when it comes to Martone at five to the Predators, quote, there's a sneaky hunch that Nashville could acquire an NHL player and more from the Islanders in exchange for this selection if James Hagans is available. By the way, she also has the Predators taking Sasha Bumadine, a defenseman out of Boston University at 23, and Malcolm Spence, a forward from the Ontario Hockey League, the OHL, at 26. So again, there's a hunch that the Predators could deal with the Islanders that fifth pick. And Greg Wyshynski, her colleague at ESPN, has also said something very similar, which is the Islanders are interested in trying to get back into the top five so that they can double dip. So that they can go, boom, right there for Schaefer at one, and boom, Hagans right there at five. Hagans is a local Long Island kid. Here's the problem I have with that. I'm not exactly sure what the Islanders have that I want. You may say Noah Dobson, but Noah Dobson to me is not worth the potential number one center that I would not be drafting by making that pick. So I'd say, I'm not sure I'm interested in that. So scratch that off. Now, Dobson could be part of a package, but again, I have to give Dobson an 8-year contract worth $10 million a year if I were to acquire him. I'm not trading the fifth pick for a right shot D. I'm not doing that. So here are the ideas I've had when it comes to making that trade or whatever with the fifth pick. Number one, if I'm going to do it, you'd have to get a piece for this year's upcoming team. And I think you need a future unprotected first-round pick from a bad team. So if the Islanders were to call and they were to want number five and they would want to deal Noah Dobson, it would have to start at Noah Dobson. And I'd probably have to get Callum Ritchie in the deal, who is a young centerman that they acquired at the trade deadline this past year. And you'd have to give me an unprotected first rounder next year. And they have Colorado's first rounder next year as well, which could the Avs could defer to 27. You'd probably have to give me that too. So two first rounders, Callum Ritchie, and who's a young center, and Dobson. I don't know if the Islanders would do that. Number two. And the big reason for that is the unprotected pick that I get could be number two overall next year. It also could be 17 overall. So I'm taking a risk there, but that would be the first. The second question when it comes to trading that pick is there a number one center on a team that is looking to tear it down and start over who would be willing to deal that guy to the Predators? Now, that takes me back to the Islanders, because the Islanders have Matthew Barzal. Now, Matthew Barzal was injured at the end of last season, but Matthew Barzal, when he was playing a full season at age 26, for the Islanders, put up 80 points in 80 games. The year before that, 51 points in 58 games. It does feel like he is kind of a point-per-game guy, which is very hard to find. He's 6'1". He's a centerman, and he's got 5 years left on his contract. He's 28 years old, kind of right there in that prime, and he did play for Barry Trotz in New York. And I asked him about Barzal, you know, hey, would this be a move you'd make? And Barry was like, well, I can't talk about a guy on another team, but, you know, hey, we got to consider all options and blah, blah, blah. If the owner has come to you and said, hey, I need you to win this year, then I would make that trade. And I don't know if Bill Haslam has done that or if Bill Haslam hasn't done that. But is there a number one center on another team that I can trade the fifth pick for and boom, now I've got my center for next year? I can drop O'Reilly down to the second line and I can put Stamkos on the wing, and Stamkos can know, hey, you are staying on the wing and you are playing with either Matthew Barzal or you are playing with Ryan O'Reilly. Again, I wouldn't love doing that. I say I wouldn't love doing that, but it could be on the table. Number three. Now, this is something that I've thought about, and I just don't know if San Jose would be interested in this. But unlike the Islanders, who clearly want James Hagans, for me, this would be more about Porter Martone. So Will Smith is in San Jose. Now, he did not light it up last year playing on the wing with Macklin Celebrini, but again, a lot of these guys don't light it up. But 2 years ago, Barry Trotz was willing to go all in to get Will Smith. Reportedly, Trotz was looking at giving up 4 first-round picks. Now, Askarov would have been part of the deal, but it would have been the 2 picks in the 23 draft, which ended up being Matthew Wood and Tanner Mullendyke, plus the first-rounder last year, which ended up being Igor Surin, and Yaroslav Askarov in exchange for the 4th overall pick, which the Predators would have used on whoever didn't get picked between Connor Bedard, Leo Carlson, Adam Fantilli, and Will Smith. And it did feel like at that point in time, Will Smith was going to be the 4th pick. So last year, Will Smith played the wing. Now, he did play center in college, but he played the wing at BC, but he did play the wing last year. He's 6'1", 180 pounds, and in 74 games, he had 45 points. Again, he's a young guy. And he's not going to be McDavid, but he did project 2 years ago to be a number one centerman. But he played on the wing last year next to Macklin Celebrini, who is the number one center of the future for the San Jose Sharks. San Jose is going to take Michael Mesa with the number 2 overall pick, so he is going to be their second center. So it feels like Will Smith is going to be on the wing in San Jose. But if Barry Trotz loved him 2 years ago in 2023, and he played 74 games last year in the NHL as a 19-year-old, would Barry Trotz not be interested in him at 20 years old coming off of an 18-goal season where you know he can play in the NHL and sticking him as the second-line centerman that the Predators don't have? He's entering year 2, so then the question has to be Hagans or Smith. 2 years ago, it felt like people considered Will Smith to be in a class better than James Hagans. And I wonder if San Jose is thinking, well, we're going to play him on the wing. Is he a better winger than Porter Martone, who could go and slide in next to either Michael Mesa or Macklin Celebrini? And I don't know the answer to that. But I do think I'd pick up the phone and I'd say to San Jose, hey, if Martone is there, would you have interest in flipping this pick for Will Smith if you loved him that much 2 years ago? Because, again, if you draft Hagans, he may go back to BC. He may be in Milwaukee next year. He may not be on the team. But if I'm dealing the 5th pick and I'm Barry Trotz, I better have a freaking haul in return. And that being said, I just don't think that the Predators are going to deal that fifth pick. 615-737-1025. We'll hit phones on the way out today. And then a special edition of Preds Insiders follows us ahead of the draft. 615-737-1025. It's Stillman and Company on 102.5 and 106 for the game. So when it comes to deciding between what you really value the most, is it the high-end skill, even if it's in a smaller package? Is it the compete level of a Caleb DeNoyer or a Brady Martin, which is a lot like Sam Bennett? You know, people are comparing him to Sam Bennett. Is it the just raw size and talent, albeit with the medical question marks? Which of those matters the most to you?
Oh, wow. They all bring different packages. What matters most to me? I think the safest thing is always the compete, the drive. That's a really something that I don't think you find a National Hockey League player, unless they're ultra skilled, are going to make it in the National Hockey League for any length of time. So you're looking for a combination. They all have skill.
There you go. That was Barry Trotz on the program earlier this week. Again, tomorrow they'll be picking number 5. Adam and Willie will have a special edition of Preds Insiders coming up as soon as we hop off. Let's hit some phones here on the program, 615-737-1025. Tomorrow's one of those days. You know, I don't expect the Predators to be big players on free agency on July 1, which kind of sucks because it was fun, you know, at least on the radio, you know, last year when they were big players. But there are a couple of days out of the year. The draft is one of them when the Predators are picking either a lot like they were in 23 or picking high like they are tomorrow, where I will be glued to TSN and Canadian media tomorrow about what they're saying ahead of the draft and all that kind of stuff. And then there's July 1 and then kind of the fallout on July 2nd. And then once we get to around to July 4th, then, you know, hockey's kind of, you know, it is what it is at that point in time. So, with that being said, the draft is tomorrow. Let's knock out some phones here. Ryan says, what is the likelihood that the Predators trade all 3 number ones this year to move up to number 2 to get the big boy center and Michael Mesa? Curious on your thoughts on both sides of interest in this deal. I think the Predators would do it. I don't think San Jose will. So, I mean, people keep saying, go up to 2 and get Mesa. Go up to 2. I just think Mesa is viewed as an elite prospect, and they're not going to trade him. And this is a lot like when you had the first pick with Cam Ward. And people were, oh, go up and go get Cam Ward. And for whatever reason, the Titans thought Cam Ward was an elite prospect. So that just wasn't going to happen. So I keep getting this. People keep texting in about trading for Mesa. And it's like, I don't think you could do that. Just like you can't trade for Schaefer. The Islanders are not interested in trading the number one pick. If you have the number one or number two pick, you tell everybody don't call. I think that's what's going on there. Matthew from Jolton says, ChatGPT says this is a fair trade. The Islanders receive the 5th overall pick, Fedor Svechkov, David Edstrom, and a 2026 second round pick, while the Predators receive Noah Dobson and Matthew Barzal. Here's the problem with that trade. Barzal makes $9.15 million. And Dobson is going to make $10 million. Now, he's an RFA. So that means that his contract would count for this upcoming season. Whereas, if they were to acquire a right shot defenseman like Rasmus Anderson from Calgary, who's got 1 year left on his new deal, his new contract would not kick in until next year. So the Predators don't have the cap space. They've got $14.5 million in cap space, and you're looking for them to take on $19 million. You can't do it. That's not possible. So keep that in mind. This is not football. The cap is real as far as the NHL is concerned. One texter into the text line says, what would you think if the Predators take Martone at 5 and trade up with the other 2 first-round picks to the upper teens and take Roger McQueen if he's still there? So Trotz basically has said, and I heard Scott Wheeler say the same thing when he was on the Midday Show, he's the Athletic's main prospect writer for hockey, that after about pick 8, there's a drop-off. And then I think Trotz has said a lot of teams have tried to call to get back up into the teens, and even they're getting a little bit refuted. If they were to trade the other two picks to Tate McQueen, I wouldn't have a problem with it. Even though McQueen's got a bad back, that is a calculated risk. A 6'5 center with exceptional skating who's got a bad back, that's a risk I'm willing to take. And I would hope Barry Trotz would say, after he makes that trade, Barry Trotz would say, okay, I'm taking the risk on the back. I hope it will be okay, but I've got my future piece as far as Martone is concerned. I hope that McQueen, I'm taking a big swing here, and if it doesn't work out because of the back, then it doesn't work out. But anything short of that, and I think the Predators are out as far as Roger McQueen is concerned. So I think it's simple. I think it's either going to be Martone, Hagans, or Brady Martin. I think it's going to be one of the three. That's it for us. We are out of here today. Tomorrow, draft day, and the Predators are on the clock at number 5, and we will be following everybody from Pierre LeBrun to Elliot Friedman to everybody else about what the latest is. Usually there's always some Barry Trotz drama as far as draft day is concerned. We will be keeping our eyes on that, and we've got our draft preview show, a special edition of Preds Insiders with Adam and Willie, which is coming up next. Stillman and Company. We'll see everybody tomorrow at 2.